AgBioscience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
There are so many issues, but there are three that agriculture can solve: food security, assisting with climate change, and the energy transition. Let's not lose this opportunity and pass it to the next generation or to our children to solve. We have to act now.
Welcome to AgBioscience, the number one podcast in the world for innovation in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture. Here is your host, Agrinova CEO, Mitch Fraser.
Welcome back to a special edition of Ag Bioscience here with Kayla Chittister as we look back on the month gone by from September 2024. Kayla, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Fabulous. It's good to be with you. Appropriate day to be together for a two-peat. A double on a Monday.
I love it. A two-peat. A two-peat of Ag Bioscience, two episodes on International Podcast Day. Happy Podcast Day, everybody.
And happy Podcast Day to you.
Thanks.
Producer extraordinaire Kayla Chittister. It is amazing what we have built together. Kayla, thanks for your work. To all those who listen every Monday morning, we appreciate you a ton. Together, we've created a podcast, us, not just Kayla and I, but us, this audience, that's now among the top 5% of all podcasts worldwide. It's incredible.
It's a great little community. We appreciate y'all.
We do. Thanks for the notes, the emails, the texts, the calls, all of those things. We appreciate it. And as we look back on what happened here in September 2024 in Ag Bioscience, Kayla, it's been a busy one.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, every year, what I love about how we do things at Agrinovis is we start the year looking ahead and saying, what are the big things that are going to define the Ag Biosciences in the coming year? And we did that this year, and we saw a lot of that play out here in September.
We did. Two of the big trends that we saw at the beginning of the year played out incredibly well here in September 2024. The first is AI, artificial intelligence, moving from hype to help. We had Quadrant in September, brought together about 100 of our closest friends in Indianapolis, and welcomed Kristen Owen, Executive Director of Equity Research at Oppenheimer, who provided just this beautiful, this elegant view of AI and how she's looking at it as someone who looks at stocks and evaluates the value of companies and the opportunity it has to really affect the future.
And we've had Kristen on the podcast to talk about this before. She has a fantastic perspective on it how it's going to affect the farm gate and what's going to be impactful and what's going to be frilly when it comes to AI, because that's a reality too. And so being able to differentiate that, super important.
Well, we saw, I mean, what I love, Kristen talks about the AI multiple gain, right? When a company positions themselves and it's real in AI, the amount of value that's accretive to the company. I saw this yesterday. I was traveling and was looking at some different coverage. I mean, this is crazy. So OpenAI, the parent company of ChatGPT. So ChatGPT is the product, AI-powered chatbot, estimated to be $150 billion in market value. Here's the crazy piece. Like, that's just a big number. Mm-hmm. But if you put this into context, that's the value of John Deere, the company, and Ford Motor Company combined.
And when you begin to think about the early innings AI, that makes it even crazier to consider its potential.
It is wild. I mean, ChatGPT has just gone has incredible far reach. It is extraordinary what we've seen with AI. And it was great to have Brad Firth, Director of Innovation from Bex Hybrids, Aaron Schott from CEO, founder of Biomedit, animal health biotech company, doing some amazing work in microbiome, to have them join Kristen for the conversation, because you began to see, okay, so what does this really mean? What does AI in ag bioscience really mean? And it was I found it fascinating when Aaron Schott walked through how he's thinking about using AI. He shared a personal example of, you know, he had a relative that was sick and wanted to look at all these medicines and what the possible interactions were. And he could do that because he's a really smart guy on his own, but ChatGPT made it super quick. But then when he put it into context of business and the idea of being able to innovate, to think through genetic engineering at scale, I mean, it's incredible the unlocks that become possible. And then Brad, Beck's Hybrid, nation's largest privately held retail seed brand, headquartered just outside of Indianapolis in Atlanta, Indiana. You know, Brad walked through how he uses AI, uses ChatGPT, but also how they're thinking about it in terms of the business. And I love this idea that, you know, Brad talked about AI may not be ready for prime time for things that are operationally requisite, right? Where it is mission critical, no fail, AI is probably not there yet. But the things that he began to walk through, counting seeds, sorting seeds, using, you know, plowing through powerful troves of data. I mean, it's those kinds of use cases that become a massive unlock for the future of ag bioscience.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll say this. We had Aaron Schott and his chief technology officer at BiomeEdit, Eric Bonobo, on with us earlier this year. We'll link that episode in the show notes. Brad Fruth will not come on this podcast despite several invitations and requests to do so. Former radio personality.
It'll happen. So AI, a big piece of what we saw in September 2024 in ag bioscience. Another that we saw is this tightening global economy, and not just here in the States, but all around the world, this tightening global economy, creating the conditions, creating the requirement to fuel innovation. Look, corn is not the perfect proxy for the overall ag market, but that's a pretty good one. When you look at corn in Q3 2024, it hit a four-year low. And so what we see is we're definitely in a down cycle in production agriculture, which then cascades across animal health, across food, across ag tech and production agriculture, certainly, and plant science and crop protection. All those pieces are ultimately have an input or an output into the corn market. But what you begin to see is there's some really interesting innovations, some really fascinating partnerships that we're already seeing come to fruition. And we saw one here in September, I think is indicative of what this future could be of companies working together, linking arms to accelerate innovation in what is really a tough economy.
Yeah. And Corteva, specifically the Corteva Catalyst program, is leading the way. The recent announcement to collaborate on a joint venture with Pairwise that also includes about a $25 million investment to advance gene editing. Like, it's a big deal.
It is a big deal. We've had Christy Wright, the director of food from Corteva, on the podcast. Would love to throw a link to her episode down in the notes. What I think is so powerful about this, so Pairwise, they have historically focused on, I mean, they're almost a food company. If you look at their website and you look at the sort of the story behind the story, their whole ambition is to use gene editing as a way to make produce, to make food more accessible and more healthy. So think about a seedless berry as an example, right? Maybe you don't want a blackberry with a thing in the middle of it. They're figuring out a way to make that possible. Corteva has had such a big, bold vision around food and the role of food in nutrition and health. And then also, when you look at Corteva Catalyst, you know, when they launched that, Tom Green was on the podcast earlier this year, mm-hmm. the leader of Corteva Catalyst. Tom walked through four areas that they're really focused on Catalyst with. One is gene editing, one is tech platforms, one is decision science, and one is on biologicals. And when you see, I have goosebumps, like when you see a big company cast a vision, and to see that vision in a relatively short period of time, we're talking less than three quarters from the announcement of when Corteva Catalyst happened, to see Tom and the team execute a venture capital investment into a company like Pairwise, that speed, that precision, that's impressive.
Yeah. And following this announcement, you had a really unique opportunity here recently to be on stage with Corteva CEO Chuck Magro and Elanco CEO Jeff Simmons at the same time at the National Association of State Directors of Agriculture. That's a mouthful.
It is. NASDA.
NASDA, for short, to talk more about science and our opportunities. And so we have a unique treat today.
We do. I have to say, before we pitch to the audio from NASDA, Kayla, it's rare that you sort of have these out-of-body experiences. And I got to tell you, being on stage with the CEO of the largest pure-play ag company in the world, an amazing guy, Chuck Magro, used to be the CEO of Nutrien, named Indianapolis the company's global headquarters back in 2022, after joining the company in late 2021. I mean, just to, again, you see a pattern here of speed and precision. Chuck, an amazing guy. And then the Elanco CEO, Jeff Simmons, a friend, serves on our executive committee here at Agrinovis, and a guy who has pioneered innovation in animal health. It was an honor, sounds cliche to say, to be on the stage with these two men. I admire them both. What they walked through in 24 minutes was something unlike anything that's happened before. We covered everything from regulatory to global trade to current state of the market. Let's take a listen. Here's Elanco CEO Jeff Simmons and Corteva CEO Chuck Magro at the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture in Indianapolis in September 2024. Well, good morning, NASDA. It is fantastic to be with leaders in agriculture of the very best country on the planet. The work that you do every day, the leadership that you provide for farmers and ranchers all across this great country, leave an indelible mark, not just on our country, but on this world. And today we are joined by two incredible leaders to put some global perspective on what's happening in the global market, in animal health, as well as in crop science and crop protection. We're joined by Jeff Simmons, the CEO of Elanco, the second largest independent animal health company in the world. Jeff, come on up. And we're joined by Chuck Magro, the CEO of the largest pure play ag company in the world, Corteva Agriscience. Gentlemen, welcome. Now, Corteva may be a new name to many. It's still relatively new, but many are familiar with the Pioneer seed brand. That's in Chuck's remit. Chuck joined the company back in 21 from Nutrien, which is, I know, a familiar company to many. Now, gentlemen, you both lead global publicly traded companies. Jeff, you have an incredible perspective on what's happening on farms, on ranches. Chuck, you in the fields all around the world. Beyond the headlines, let's start with the current market. What are you hearing? What are you seeing? Give us a sense of what's actually happening in the global market for ag today. Chuck?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's wonderful to be here. And I'd just like to start with a thank you. I've spent a lot of time with farmers and ranchers in the U.S., and I know that they really, really value the relationship that they have with the states. So thank you for what you do. I'm going to keep my comments pretty brief, and I'll just keep it to the grain and oil seeds markets. I'd say right now there's a lot of good news and then some mixed current market signals. So what I'd say right now is that the global demand for food and fuel continues to increase. Last year was a record. We expect it to be a record again this year. And the mandate for ag in terms of crop production hasn't changed. It's to feed the world. And when you look at global food security, since COVID and then the Russia-Ukraine war, every country's thinking through that actually global food security is an element or a dimension of national security. And a lot of countries are redoing their policies around that. I think from a grain perspective, there's also two other dimensions now. Climate change and how ag can influence in a positive way, climate change. And then facilitating the energy transition, moving the world away from fossil fuels. Ag and biofuels need to be a major part of that. So there's lots that we're positive and we're constructive about. The current market conditions here, but also in other parts of the world, grain prices are lower than they've been. So we've just come off almost a super cycle when it comes to peak grain pricing. And margins for farmers now are tighter than they have been. And so they're doing exactly what every business person would do. They're prioritizing their budgets. They're making wise investment decisions. But the one thing they're asking Corteva for is that next generation of technology, because they know that a couple bushels per acre could be the difference between breaking even and profit. And so we're rushing. This year we brought out, for example, 300 new hybrids and varieties in corn and soybean worldwide to help farmers with that challenge.
Yeah, I echo Chuck's comments. Thank you for what you do. Welcome to Indiana, to Ted McKinney and NASDA overall. I mean, we are a powerful country in the most powerful industry in the most essential thing, feeding people. And so what you do, the power of 50 states is, but being able to work together and being able to get the right outcome and stay competitive is key. So thank you, NASDA, for what you represent. So look, I would build on Chuck's comments. I mean, we're going to, on the meat, milk, eggs, and fish, we're one of the big consumers of Chuck's industry in terms of the animal industry. And I would say we have seen an absolute, you know, as much as maybe the world wants to resist what we do, taste, cost, and nutrition prevails. We ate more animal protein in the world than we ever have. And 3 years ago, the United Nations said, you know, to solve our problems, we need the just removal of livestock. 3 years later, just last year, they said, okay, because of taste, cost, nutrition, and animal protein climbing, the United Nations themselves said growth will be 50% more the next decade than the last decade. So their numbers alone, they had to just say the facts, consumers are too powerful. We can't, you know, even with politics, we can't prevail. We need to reduce the footprint 30%, this United Nations, but we got to increase productivity 1.7%. So suddenly productivity is now a key lever for One Health and environmental health. So I would build on Chuck's point is what we see as the most converging trend coming is truly human health. People want more animal protein. This Western diet is catching on around the world where we're eating less of the white stuff, sugar and bread, and we're eating a lot more meat, milk, and eggs. But we've got to do it with less environment. A statistic that concerns every boardroom of every meat company is 66% of people in the Gen Z under 25 years of age are backing away from animal protein if we don't see an environmental change. So whatever you believe, we need climate-neutral farms. And with that, watch out. There is no ceiling on our industry. But lastly, and I think Chuck and I both agree, there's never been a more competitive world. And there's some U.S. statistics that ought to be a little alarming to all of us when we start to become not in the top 20 on innovation, when we are no longer the lead exporter on certain ingredients. We got to wake up to the fact that the world is competing with us and we haven't had a great decade on competition.
You both hit sustainability, and it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And I think it'd be really important to shape this discussion as two halves of a whole. We so often talk about environmental sustainability, and you both hit how do we get to, in Chuck's world, nitrogen reduction, carbon sequestration, Jeff, greenhouse gas emissions. But it also has to drive net farm income. This can't be one at the expense of the other. We'd love to hear how you're both thinking about this two halves of a whole approach, driving farmer net farm income and advancing sustainability.
Yeah, maybe I can jump in. It's become real to us. We've had the first two approvals by the FDA with environmental claims, Experior and beef, to reduce ammonia, and now recently here, Bovaer, to reduce methane in the dairy industry. So, and we can get into some of the details on that. But, you know, the only way, like on a Bovaer product that doesn't have an economic or a fee conversion change, you've got to be able to set up this. So we've worked very closely with the industry, especially starting with the dairy industry, to actually start an on-farm analytics that's certified independently by the key environmental. And we've got about 500,000, about 500,000 of the 9 million cows now across this country that have a database that can actually measure emissions through analytics so that any intervention that comes in, like a Bovaer or a biodigester, they can actually receive money. So today we are monetizing carbon, and in addition to a milk check, there are carbon checks now that are going to be received and are being received today on farms today. So that one is analytics on the farm, and then we've spun out a company called Athian, which you know about, Mitch. We actually can actually take the measurements in that data and sell carbon to the CPG companies. So you take a Nestle or a Starbucks on a $4 gallon of milk for 2 to 3 cents a gallon, that turns into about 20 bucks a cow right now. So that's an inset market, not an offset market. It has now been established in U.S. dairy, soon to be expanded into beef. And we need that because, again, sustainability starts with profitability.
Yeah.
Farmers must profit from this. This can't be an ESG movement mandated like that's actually what's happening in European agriculture. So so we've got the innovation. Bovaer is coming to the U.S. market now. And with that, you know, farmers are going to be able to receive a carbon check. And we can, and that's done through actually the money ultimately. There's some USDA grants on RCPP, but mostly it's going to come from the CPG companies, which they want, because it's the number one deterrent on their brand right now.
Chuck?
Yeah, so I would agree completely with Jeff. So from a sustainability perspective, it's core to certainly our strategy, but the reason it's core is because it's going to be the only pathway to be profitable longer term. Yeah. And I think that's going to flow right to the farm. 100% of our R&D pipeline, so the products that we have lined up that come out in the next decade or longer, are sustainable by our definition. And we've got several new products. So, you know, we've got a rice herbicide, for example, that we're just launching, and it requires one sugar pack per hectare. So 150 times less than the previous generation of technology. It's absolutely remarkable now. Think about that, one sugar packet per hectare. And then you mentioned nitrogen. So we have now a biological product that is a microbial, so a living thing that can convert nitrogen from the air and put it right into the crop. And you can reduce your nitrogen by 6-8%. It's again, amazing technology. It's the first product that the USDA has quality certified, and it's considered to be an organic product. So this is the future of innovation, and that will drive to the bottom line of farmers. I'll make one last point, Mitch, which I think is the most important point. The major driver for sustainability needs to be productivity on the farm. So it needs to be yield. And sometimes the definition doesn't even encapsulate the definition which is yield. And if you think about it, and here's a fun fact. So in Pioneer corn, the world record is over 600 bushels an acre in a US farmer. In soybeans, it's over 200 bushels. And you know the US average for corn this year will be probably 180, 181. The genetic potential in the corn seed today is many times above that. That's the opportunity we need to work together to unlock. Imagine what we can do when it comes to sustainability if we can, again, triple the production on an acre.
Why do you think yield is not part of that equation today?
I think it has to do with politics and a lot of alternate agendas, because if the definition should be very simple, that we need to be able to feed more people with less land, less water, and less carbon. And we just need to keep focused that there is a numerator and a denominator when you look at this. And yield is the most powerful tool, certainly, that we have, I think, to put in the hands of farmers, which is to drive up the productivity per acre.
I also think traditional productivity got tagged and maybe was not, you know, earlier generations of productivity products. You know, we had antibiotics before, and we've innovated our way out. Chuck's industry's innovated far out of what they have. We're even trying to replace ourselves with this next generation of innovation, and I think we need to do a better job of promoting what this next generation is and what it's not. I think that's really important.
I'm so glad you talk about this next generation, Jeff, because I think when we think about the future of agriculture, everyone that's here thinking about how do we actually have the freedom to operate? Yeah. How do the people in every state, every nation have the ability to actually do what they need to do, whether it be grow crops, raise animals for protein? Give us a sense today of the regulatory challenges, this patchwork fabric that exists that creates maybe a challenge to get the innovations that you both just talked about to actual market.
We as a country, I'll jump in because I'm pretty adamant, we have a real life example, a couple that have happened, and some positive ones, but science must prevail. And the day we lose science, and we lose the facts of science, and we lose a regulatory body that is based on science, everything deteriorates. And we see that. We could probably name a dozen countries around the world where politics have prevailed over science. And that's, we must all lobby for science to prevail. And I would say there's good signs of it. There's always challenges. We can name those. But I mean, I would tell you the FDA has come forward with a accelerated path that is science-based on the environmental side for us. And we have Bovaer, which has come forward. This is a small molecule, reduces methane by 30 to 50% in cattle. And actually, the FDA stepped in and said, hey, there is an accelerated path with a feed additive product. They knew that there was over 40 countries around the world that's already approved this product. And actually, they put together kind of an iFeed accelerated regulatory path. It took about 2.5 years off what was going to be the typical path. Then there were state approvals that followed, and I would say that there was, you know, needs for a lot of states to have certain data, but I'll credit a California, a New Mexico, a Washington that stepped in. We've got over 38 states that have approved this within months after our approval, and it's all because it's been very science-based, and it's also seen that, hey, what the benefit's going to be is significant, both environmental and farmer value. So a credit there. At the same time, there's a lot of, you know, continued politics that has made regulatory, to me, something that we need to continue to work on. We're not there yet, but we do have a positive example on the animal side that I'll point to, and a real credit to a lot of states that are here today.
Yeah, so our reality is it takes about 13 years to get a new crop protection product in the hands of farmers in the U.S., and it's about 16 years for a new biotech trait in seed. And so you have to ask yourself, right, in today's world where farmers need these tools and this technology, where it is just getting more difficult to grow food, is that the right answer for us? Is there a way to shave some time off of this? And we're not looking at cutting corners. We want the product to go through all the rigorous safety reviews it has to. But there is a lot of politics involved in this. And then once we get the products approved in the US, we still need regulatory approval around the world before a US farmer can use the technology, because the global grain trade, of course, is connected. And what we're finding is that there's still too many countries that are restricting approvals and access. And some of it is based on politics. And so what that does is it prevents U.S. farmers from having the very best technology available to them to solve their problems and to drive yield and productivity. So I would agree completely with Jeff, is we have to have more science and less politics when it comes to the global regulatory system, because the challenges and the pressures that farmers are facing worldwide right now are escalating. There's just numerous stories that we can share and data points. But it is just more and more difficult to grow a crop. You can see it in the volatility and weather patterns, but you can also see it in the migration of insects and disease today. If you look at Europe around the olive crop, in the southern part of the US, the citrus crop, there's just so many examples where these crops are getting under tremendous pressure. And we do know scientifically that the tools we're trying to bring into farmers' hands today are 100 times better than what they're using. And so there's got to be a way to kind of work through this, because I'm very confident that we have the scientific answers, but we need to put it into the hands of farmers.
The scientific answer, Chuck, undoubtedly in your world has a component to gene editing. We've gone through an era of gene modification, GMOs. Now we're in an era of gene editing. You just made a big move last week, investment in a young North Carolina company focused on gene editing, making food more accessible for folks. How are you seeing regulation keep pace? When you think about 13 years or 16 years, it's hard for regulation to actually reflect the reality of scientific advancements.
Yeah, so gene editing is a major topic. We've seen enough of the technology, and just to level set this, so Corteva is the largest patent holder of gene-edited technology in crops outside of the country of China. We would be number two. And we've seen enough of what we think we can do with the science that it will be more impactful for farmers than biotechnology was 25 years ago. This is gonna revolutionize, I think, how farmers farm. So the potential is enormous, but we still don't have freedom to operate. Many countries have, Canada, the UK, Brazil, the US is putting its guidelines together now. We're very optimistic that it's heading in the right direction, but several countries have not. And again, until we have sort of a global harmonized regulatory system when it comes to gene editing, we won't be able to have these wonderful tools and technologies available to farmers. What we're trying to do as Corteva is we have actually doubled our investment in gene editing internally. So now we're spending a significant amount of so Corteva spends around 8% of its revenue, call it $1.6 billion per year in research and development. And this is one of the fastest growing areas that we're investing in. But we also have about 40 partnerships. The one you just described with Pairwise is one of our most recent. We think that this technology will be, there'll be a democracy around it, right? We're making this technology, we've already committed to do that with the European government. We'll make sure that small scientific companies will have access to the IP, which I think is very, very important, right? But it also takes, I think, a harmonized regulatory system to ensure we can put these tools in the hands of farmers. But I would say also that we're optimistic because I think there is a general recognition after we've been through COVID and certain geopolitical issues that food security is going to be absolutely incredible, or important. And we need to have new tools in the hands of farmers. So I am seeing forward momentum when it comes to approvals in gene editing, but we're not there yet.
And Jeff, you have a JAK inhibitor product you just launched. You have a lot of new innovations. Is regulation keeping up in animal health?
Yeah, and I think we can learn from our parent industry. We got the most valuable human pharmaceutical company here in Indianapolis and in Eli Lilly. But I sit as an officer representing animal health on that table. And there's a few lessons I think we can learn, and it ties to what Chuck just said. We need predictable regulatory paths. You know, there's an Animal Drug User Fee Act that was based off from a Human User Fee Act where the industry pays, but we know when we submit a protocol, we know we'll get an answer in 180 days. We need that, I think EPA, USDA, we need that more distinctful across the industry. That's one. And I think when that happens, a high path AI or moving into, we need to, as an industry, be able to say, we'll invest, but we need to have some kind of a predictable outcome. It can't be 16 years in billions of dollars and we hope we get an answer. So I think we need the human pharma has that. The other is when there's an emergency and there's a problem, all right, we need to prove safety, but sometimes we may accelerate on efficacy. And by doing that, that can put industry, you know, put products into the market like they do for oncology or cancer as an example. So I think there's some ways to create a more predictable path and we need to do that. And we need to be careful because we're seeing other parts of the world do this in a probably more accelerated way.
We've talked a lot about inputs, innovation specifically. Let's talk about outputs, particularly in the regulatory environment. So much of this market, so much of the ag market is commodity, and it's driven by volume, and it's driven by supply and demand. I mean, really simple, right? If we can nail supply and we can nail demand, this market's pretty efficient. But in a global trade environment that is turbulent at best, demand is hard to predict. Demand is hard to navigate. How are you both thinking about, in your worlds, this global trade reality that is today?
That's a deep question. I guess let's start with the premise here. A farmer in this state, in Indiana, on average, they're producing three times as much as their grandparents did just three generations ago. You know, ag in this country is a huge success story. And you look and you step back and you say, okay, how did that happen? Because it is a remarkable story. It's hard work, it's know-how, and it's placing the best darn technology we can in the hands of farmers and letting them do their job. And lo and behold, they've been able to increase production by three times. And so our principle at Corteva is we want to maintain that leadership, right? And there is huge competition. Jeff mentioned in his opening comments, which I completely agree. Just take a Brazilian farmer. There's 70% of Brazil farms are over 500 acres. In this country, it's less than 20. So we don't have the size advantage that is growing in Argentina, Australia, even where I'm from in Canada, the farms are much bigger. So we need to be able to be more productive and we need to put the best technology in the hands of farmers. And I think that when you start to look at that, then there's gonna be global trade issues always. And it's very complex. But I think what we need to do is we need to be able to accelerate the adoption of new technology under what we can control as a country. And then if other countries choose not to use that technology, look, the world still needs the food. And it will migrate naturally because there's no other way to put sort of pressure on other governments to accept new technology. But they have their own food security challenges. So what I'm hopeful in, and I am an optimist when it comes to this, is that the trade issues hopefully will be temporary and they'll work themselves out. I think what we have to do is stay focused on just making sure that there is the best technology and the regulatory processes are harmonized where we can harmonize them.
Yeah, and I would like to just say everything he just said, because it's exactly the same in our industry. But look, I think what's so great is, you know, it does come back to products. And I think we need to, I agree there is a commodity here, but I would say we use a lot of Chuck's products in the animal side. There's been a lot of innovation. Volume's up, value's up, but variety is up in animal protein. Look at the story of Fairlife milk that actually came from this state. I mean, that is the hottest, fastest growing protein. It's Coca-Cola's biggest brand. It's a multi-billion dollar brand. It's double the protein, half the calories. A lot of people here, you know, and it's tied to the, you know, you look at the story of Tyson Foods and ionophores. No antibiotic ever was bad. They lost over $300 million. There's lots of issues. They brought back what the safe technology was and didn't let the consumer push around. Chick-fil-A and others followed. I think it is a lot about to decommoditize in where we can in this country, and that can export as well. So, you know, if I look at the different cuts of meat today, when we look at being able to do what we've done on the dairy side, it's creating higher quality products, and then being able to say, hey, we're having a forum in this city here in a few months around the path to a climate neutral farm. We need farms to be able to say, hey, we capture as many emissions as we actually create. We are positive for the environment, and we produce a product that's unique. That will make, I think, the U.S. industry more competitive internationally. But at the same time, the one separate plug I would make that Chuck mentioned is IP matters. And without IP, and I think we have, you know, a few countries far to the east that put bigger threats today than even 3 years ago pre-COVID on our IP situation. Without intellectual property, things break down. That's something that worries me a little bit about the long-term competitiveness of America without having strong IP.
We've talked a lot about this connection between food security and national security, and core to that is agriculture's advancement. Jeff, you mentioned this connection between people and food and ag, and I want to spend a little time there because I think it's really important. I think so many of us, we talk about ag, but we rarely talk about food. As you think about strategy for Elanco, and Chuck, eager to hear your strategy here at Corteva as well, how are you thinking about food and nutrition as part of the future of animal health?
I think you just need to look at all the market research on the Gen Z, the Gen Alpha. The worry is the next generation is pretty demanding what they want. Now, they may not understand what it takes to get what they want, but we can't ignore them to say, well, they just don't understand. I think we need to be able to produce products. 5 years ago in our industry, it was going to be, you know, the alternative meats, the Impossible Burgers, everything was going to prevail. And, you know, the taste, the cost, the nutrition, all these things have really kind of swayed back. But I think ultimately, though, we're going to have to make sure that what we do does converge. A mile from here, we are putting a headquarters, but Purdue University's coming, innovators are coming, and we're calling it the One Health District. Is what are we trying to solve? Human health, animal health, and environmental health. And it's going to take all of our industries working together to produce an end product that this next generation, our kids, are proud of. And if we can do that, I think it will be the next era of competitive advantage for U.S. agriculture. If we don't do that, I think that we'll put ourselves in a disadvantage. And there are some trends. I mean, we need to keep our eyes on Brazil, India. There's some places here that are, you know, have the ability to beat us on the commodity side. We've got to win on the product side.
That's great.
So I agree. Everything what Jeff said on the other side of that is the industry has done a wonderful job of feeding people right up until COVID. Today, there's about 800 million people that are food insecure worldwide, and that number is trending up, and it's expected to increase by the end of the decade. Even here in Indiana, 1 in 10, right? Food insecure in the state. So it is a absolutely real issue. We've got to figure this out. We were doing such a good job until COVID hit, and then geopolitics, trade barriers, everything went up, and we have so many more people now that are hungry at night. So for our part, you know, I mentioned that we invest a significant amount, so it's about $4 million a day in R&D. And we're trying to accelerate our technology adoption into the hands of farmers so that they can turn this ship around, because it is a human need. It's a basic need. We cannot have productive citizens if they are hungry. And usually really nasty things happen when people are hungry for too long. And there is recent history here. So we have to learn from our past, and we've got to work not only on the science front, the IP front, but the regulatory and the trade front all have to come together if we're gonna turn this around.
20th century journalist Alfred Lewis talks about we're 9 meals away from anarchy.
Yes.
And that is the finite point of why I think this is so critical.
Yeah.
Okay, gentlemen, we have 55 seconds left according to the red countdown clock here. So you have in your audience, you have the leaders of every agriculture state, you have leaders from global markets. What's the call to action? What happens when they leave NASDA, go home? What happens in animal health? What happens in plant science and crop protection to make this, again, the best place to be in agriculture?
You know, I define leadership in one word as influence. And the greatest tragedy is when people sit in positions of authority like you and say, hey, a little bit of the victimization of bigger processes and politics and things. I'm an optimist as well, and I believe individual influence is absolutely essential in the core ingredient to the success of American agriculture. And it's all of you and the example I use of a California or a Washington moving a technology forward to say, find a way. We got to stay practical. We got to find the right proof points. We got to anchor back to history, because history is a little bit playing out right now. And all of you have a lot more influence than you probably realize. And together, we do set in the greatest country and the most important industry at, I believe, the most important time. And we need you. And your influence matters. And individually, you can influence a lot more than probably you imagine.
That's great.
Look, I just say now is the time, right? There are so many issues, but there's three that agriculture can solve. Food security, assisting with climate change, and the energy transition. Let's not lose this opportunity and pass it to the next generation or to our children to solve. We have to act now.
Corteva CEO Chuck Magro, Elanco CEO Jeff Simmons, thank you both, gentlemen.
Wow, I was there for that in person. Granted, I'm moving around trying to get audio and take photos, but it's really great to like go back and get to listen
so
to
good.
It. I mean, the point continues to get driven home, like we cannot lose science, and
right.
regulatory cannot lose science. We are a country that cannot afford to do that. And so really powerful message from both of them.
Without a doubt. You look at, we so often look at, this is the only economy that touches every person on the planet, it's food. And when you begin to think of this need for regulatory consistency, predictability, when you begin to look at trade consistency, predictability, you begin to see how critical it is that we get this right. And it's incredible to have two leaders like Jeff and Chuck leading that charge. Kayla, it's been a fun month. I just got back last night. It might have been this morning from a trip where I got a chance to talk with some really bold leaders in ag finance.
Yeah, you were in Minneapolis.
Minneapolis for the Farm Credit Forum on Ag Lending. Some great leaders, bold thinkers, and walk through really the three trends, two of which we talked about here today, AI moving from hype to help, and the idea that this tightening global economy will fuel the need for innovation. Fun to talk with ag lenders, and you and I have talked about this many times. When you look at who is best positioned to really accelerate change at the farm gate, you and I both know the adage of follow the money. And there is a huge opportunity for ag lenders like Farm Credit to really be a part of this chapter of innovation that we know will have to happen as the farm economy, the ag economy struggles here as commodity prices are facing some pretty significant headwind.
Yeah. And in addition to that, I mean, this kind of all swirls together to create one massive drink as we head into the end of the year. We'll have a new leadership change in our country, and innovations, opportunities are ripe for the taking.
Without a doubt. We always say the best way to fuel innovation is clearly define the problem you're trying to solve. And we have one of the best problem solvers on the planet who is joining us for Quadrant here in Indianapolis. You can announce it.
I know. You're so excited.
I am so excited.
He has also been on the podcast this year, so we'll link his episode in the show notes. But Elliot Parker, the CEO of High Alpha Innovation, is going to keynote our December 4th Quadrant in Indianapolis, where we talk about a new era of innovation and where we're headed and our opportunities. And as a guy that just literally wrote the book on innovation, he's a very apt keynote.
It will be an incredible event, a great way to cap off a year. And I think a great way is you're thinking about 2025 goals and beginning to think through what do I want this new year to be? December 4th, mark your calendar wherever you are, whatever country you're in, whatever state you're in, it will be worth your time, effort, energy, I mean it, to be in Indianapolis. Elliot Parker's book is called The Illusion of Innovation. Elliot, the CEO of High Alpha Innovation, a startup studio that works with big companies to identify problems and create a startup to go solve those problems. But Elliot is more than a CEO. Elliot is more than an author. Elliot is a guy who has built his entire career of solving really tough problems. For those innovation junkies that are part of this podcast audience, if you've ever read Clayton Christensen's work, The Innovator's Dilemma, brilliant book, brilliant mind. Elliot was his understudy. And so you can see when you hear Elliot talk, when you read his book, you can see Clay's fingerprints on what Elliot is doing. And my hunch is Clay's looking down and smiling on what Elliot's up to.
We hope you guys will join us. Seriously, December 4th, we will link that in the show notes as well. agrinovusindiana.com/quadrant. It's a free event. Please, please, please come.
agrinovusindiana.com/quadrant. We would love to see you there. RSVP is free. Space is limited. So make sure you get in, you get signed up. We would love to see you in Indianapolis, December 4th. And with that, Kayla, I think it's time to wrap up our recap on International Podcast Day. We look back on September 2024. It's been awesome to be with you. Kayla Chittister, thanks so much for making this podcast happen every Monday morning.
Hey, likewise.
On behalf of the entire Agrinovus team, I'm Mitch Frazier, and she is
Kayla Chittister.
Saying thanks for listening. We look forward to seeing you real soon.
Ag Bioscience is a podcast by Agrinovus Indiana, hosted by Mitch Frazier, produced by Kayla Chittister and Fabian Rodriguez, photography and design by Kaylee Kerr. If you like today's episode, subscribe, rate, and review so we can bring you more conversations just like this. Get all episodes of Ag Bioscience at agrinovusindiana.com.